He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarca. This is Car Key.
And we are in 2020 and have been for a few days now. And the automotive industry rolls on. And car sales are, it's interesting. I've been following Jeep's inventories over the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I've finally decided, I figured out how dealerships buy vehicles. As we discussed in an earlier show late last year, we were discussing how dealers don't actually order cars. They get offered packages or groups of cars that the manufacturers have been making by the lot, I guess. And dealers seem to buy bunches of a particular line of cars. And the line for this discussion will be the Jeep Cherokee, because I own two. And I like them, and therefore I'm watching Cherokee inventory.
Well, hold on a second.
It's not about me, though.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
So I want to finish this story about inventories. Because this is how you, when you go to a dealership and you think you know what you want to buy, and you wander around the dealership's lot in the particular model you want to buy, and let's say you want a moonroof and you want a trailer package and you want leather heated seats, but none of the inventory has all those three things in any of the inventory on their lot that you're at the Jeep dealership you're visiting. What do you do?
Go to a different dealership.
Well, that's what you can do, or you can go and let the salesperson try to talk you out of something like they did with you.
I go
at
online
one point.
And usually I find out more about their inventory than the salesperson.
You're not the average car buyer in
but
the
America. But what I'm saying is
and
the
neither
average.
Am I.
Right. So with that being said, for people who are getting into the, let's say, car stream, who don't know that all of this takes place, it's kind of interesting. But the there should be a venue, if you will, for actually getting what you want.
Let me finish the story for the listeners, and then you guys can talk all you want about your little things about it. So I was looking for I've wanted to put a trailer hitch on my Jeep Cherokee for a long time, okay? And what I've seen is a dearth, is that a word? A dearth of Jeep Cherokees in any Jeep dealer's lots with trailer built with the factory-installed trailer hitch situation. And it costs approximately $800 to get a Jeep trailer hitch. Well, a dealership suddenly had 7 Jeep Cherokees with trailer hitch packages on them. So I've been to 3 other Jeep dealerships, and they had none. But I saw in the other Jeep dealerships packages. All the prices were the same.
Where was the location?
It didn't matter. One
yeah,
was
it
in
does.
Massachusetts, one was in Connecticut, and one was in, two were in Connecticut. And not too far apart, but one had, I wanted also a moonroof.
Wait a minute. You're not sounding like a very rational buyer right now. You
I'm
have
not.
Two
I'm
Jeeps,
just looking for I'm just
and you
trying
want
to tell
third.
How dealerships have inventories, Jay. This
and
is
what,
nothing
and
to do
what
with
I'm
me.
Trying to find out is. As far as geography is concerned. In other words, are you going to find your trailer hitches in the city? Are these packages
no,
these that you're
are
talking about?
No, these are all rural Connecticut
That's
or
why.
Massachusetts dealerships. No, it wasn't. This dealership that has 7 with trailer hitch on them just got them all in. They were all built. They had not had trailer hitches on any significant amount of inventory for the past 2 years. But they were all $41,000 vehicle packaged out, okay? So the other dealership doesn't have any trailer hitches, and they're all packaged out at $38,750. But what do they have? They have leather seats. They have premium sound systems, etc. But they're all packaged out the same. So this dealer bought 7. The one in one part of Connecticut bought 7 with trailer hitch packages for $41,220 is a sticker price. The dealership down in Ridgefield it has 5 or 6 with the $38,750 price on them with the same packages, assorted colors, and so on. So what the dealers do is they swap.
Do you think it's about swapping, or do you think it's about trying to find out what your local geographic buyers are going to purchase?
I think Fiat Chrysler built these vehicles, sent out the list of what they had in inventory to dealers, and gave dealers a package price. If you buy 5 of this or 7 of that, you'll get them for this.
Fiat Chrysler is notorious
but
for
all
not
the
asking
manufacturers
dealers
do this.
Shoving
now,
inventory.
This isn't a Fiat Chrysler thing. It just happens to be a Cherokee thing because that's the vehicle I'm knowledgeable about and studied. I might study a Ford situation at a Ford dealership and see the same kind of thing. But
or not.
Or not.
But it would be worth studying.
Well, no, it isn't. The story was, if you're looking for Jeeps or you're looking for a particular vehicle with certain inventory, with different accessories on it, and you can't find it at one Jeep dealership, you can do what I do and drive around for fun of it and look.
Or you can get a
swap situation going with your salesperson at the Jeep dealership you would like to do a deal with.
All right. Next question. I sent around something which I'm sure you saw. And ladies and gentlemen, now the press to celebrate this new decade is backing off on EVs, electric vehicles.
Correct.
So I'm not saying that that is going to happen or not. I'm just talking about in terms of the blather that is given to the average reader / listener. Oh, we're doing this. Oh, we're not doing this. Oh, we're.
I actually just
read
the article.
Well, we have Jay versus Robin on this one because Jay is all about EVs and the coming thing, and Robin is all about hybrids versus EVs because of the mobility situation or the range situation. And lo and behold, the article that you sent around, I did not read it specifically, but I read a similar one, said that there is a lot of range anxiety out there still having to be overcome by the manufacturers or the salespeople in the dealerships to get people to start going full electric, although it is coming, but slowly.
I read another article this morning, and it was it was in French. It was a Belgian article on the situation about EVs, and you know, the whole article was making the point that hydrogen fuel cells cars are the way to go. But at the end of the article, they're going, well, actually, electric vehicles are okay for the time being, but that long term, we would not have electric vehicles because of range issues and storage issues. Storing energy in a battery is difficult and space-wise not as efficient as having a tank of gasoline or some other fuel, combustible fuel.
So
hydrogen is another fuel.
We go back and forth, I think.
It's marketing.
Their whole issue about the production of batteries and what it takes to
There's an ecological situation on the production of everything that goes into an automobile.
You know, bottom line, I don't know. I've read studies going in all directions about which is better or least bad for the environment, short term, long term. I think the reality is we are going to get electric vehicles. No, we're not going to see 100% of electric vehicles anytime soon, if ever, and that's fine.
It is fine. That's what makes the world go round.
Hybrids do have, and I'll backtrack what I said maybe a few weeks ago or last week even. Toyota's Prius was definitely big thing in the early or mid 2000s when they came out with the first generation of Priuses. It is.
Priusi.
Toyota is selling a lot less of those cars now, but on the other hand, they have other models in their range that are being sold as hybrids. And honestly, the Toyota RAV4 is probably one of the most practical, best all-around vehicles money can buy. I mean,
in a hybrid form.
In a hybrid form, yeah. You have a small SUV, which is not so small anymore. It does everything well. It's all-wheel drive. I mean, we can go over this, you know, time and time again.
And it can go on electric when it charging.
They're coming out with a plug-in version, if they haven't yet. I think the 2021.
Well, a plug-in version.
So you don't have to fuss. And I've listened and sort of watched with minimal interest as a discussion has meandered. And the fact is that for a lot of people, it would seem that just have the nothing like having an option.
Yeah. Well, having the electric gas option combination or however you want to do it in form of a private in a hybrid form of a car is certainly the anxiety free way to get your cake, get good mileage, and not worry about where you're next going to be able to get fueled up either by electricity or gasoline, because you have the option of either one, and gasoline stations are all over the place. So you don't have I drove a Toyota Highlander hybrid over the weekend, and I had to drive to the airport in New York, LaGuardia, from New Canaan, and I got in the car, and I saw the gas gauge reading a little over a quarter of tank, and I said, oh, this is fine. I need fuel. By the time I got almost on the return trip home, some 70 miles later, the low fuel light had been on for 15 or 20 miles. The gauge had swung from above quarter tank right down to the bottom bar, and I knew one gas station I was willing to stop and get gas on the way home for that hybrid, but I was shocked because the round trip was 83 miles, and 83 miles, the gauge had gone from well above what I would have thought would have been the range for that down to zero. And I didn't know about how the Toyota Highlander gauges work, and that goes to the point of learning your car, because
what's the fuel capacity? Because I drive a high-end Volvo XC90 on a regular basis, and it's a 13-gallon fuel tank. So
well,
now
it's 17.
You 16, have your hybrid, but you're doing like 300
miles. Well, this is the problem
miles.
With that. This is the problem with the hybrid cars. You think you're going to get great range per gallon, but they don't put a huge tank on, so you do have to watch that situation.
And is that intentional? Is there a space issue, or is it
It's a space issue. I mean,
it's a space issue because you got batteries plus a tank.
Right. That's just curious. Yeah. But no, people don't focus on the fact that it's like, well, yes, in a normal quote normal.
But the point was, there were gas stations all on the way from the airport to my destination at home, and I was able to stop and get gas,
which means
a lot more quickly than I could have. It's not a plug-in, so I couldn't have plugged it in. But
more to the point, a gas station that you're willing to pay the price at, so that's a good thing too. Good thing you know your area.
Or you can drive a diesel Volkswagen, and any one of them will get over 600 miles on of range
if the tank is big enough.
That is the other
if
thing.
If the tank is big enough.
The diesel, this is, I will not forget our, you know, I fondly our diesel, although I also have a little moment.
Yeah, you have some stuff to talk about.
Because I wasn't saying anything.
I was reading something about an article this morning about a guy saying that all the world needed was only six cars. And
really?
He narrowed it
six
down.
Types?
Six cars. There are six models out there.
Interesting. I want to hear them.
That should, number one, what's your guess?
Jeep Cherokee.
Prius.
Nope. Okay, so, and to cover the whole spectrum of cars you may need or want, one is the Porsche Cayman or Boxster. It's the perfect sports car. It does everything well. It's as fast as a supercar. It drives like a supercar. It's less powerful, a little less fast, but it's an affordable supercar. So that's the best sports car.
Who wrote this article?
Some guy in Jalopnik. Uh-huh. And small sedan, Mazda 3. If you need a bigger sedan, Honda Accord.
Okay.
Everybody needs to move stuff around, Mercedes Sprinter.
Okay.
Big van.
Interesting.
Ford F-150. And last but not least, the Lada Niva.
What?
Yep.
Is this in the world or is this
yeah,
in
Yeah, well, I guess.
Europe.
We don't have any Lada Nivas here, but the Lada Niva is a
Well, it's a Fiat, right? Didn't the Niva was built out of a Fiat?
It was based on a Fiat.
Something.
Came out in the 80s.
Gee, Lada's still in business?
Yes, it
Remember
is.
Remember Yugas?
Yes, it is. It's but they have more modern. But it's a Russian car.
No kidding.
And it's basically in Europe or Eastern Europe.
It was
Europe.
Bought by Renault. Back, I would say, in the 90s, but I'm not quite sure.
Bought or just invested in by Renault? I don't think the Russians allow you to buy the whole company.
Right. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Partner.
Well,
anyway,
interesting last car or vehicle.
Yeah. It's a 2-door small SUV. It does everything well if you have to go in the snow and off the beaten track, and that's pretty much it. So that was that.
Okay.
Well, that goes to that particular writer's thoughts, and it was an interesting variety. And I don't know how he bases his world's needs solutions by these six cars, but
he's a little like me. He thinks he knows best what's good
He's a little like you. He knows best. Okay. Yeah. Does Jay have his own opinion of the six best cars that one would want to have
he
in
He might change
a stable?
The Lada to the RAV4.
But would he bring a Tesla? Would you bring a
Tesla? Yes, that's what I was thinking because I was
well, that's a
reading
good
about
point.
Both of them about the same time. Yeah.
Would you bring a Tesla into it?
Not yet.
Coming
not
yet. Or already
not
there?
It's just taking too long.
Speaking of things coming out that we may be looking for, I think the new Genesis SUV, and I think I talked about it briefly last week.
You did.
The new Genesis GV80, which I thought would be based on the Telluride Palisade platform. I guess I'm wrong because the
smaller, isn't it?
It may be a little smaller, Santa but it's Fe. Also based on a rear-wheel drive platform.
Okay.
So I'm on the lookout for that SUV anyway.
I have not seen a picture of it. Have you?
I've seen it with the new grille, the Genesis new grille. It's a variation on the huge grille design.
Well, speaking of new platforms and rear-wheel drives, as we have discussed briefly, the new Ford Explorer is on a rear-wheel drive platform as opposed to the front-wheel drive platform and is apparently being well-received. There was a little blurb in one of my publications showing that a Ford Explorer outfitted with lots of options costs more than the new Corvette at the baseline situation.
You can buy a new Ford Explorer, and I think I touched on that too.
Well,
on the price, the range of price on the same vehicle goes from about $30,000, under $30,000
right,
on the base Explorer
to $70,000
plus. To $70,000,
yeah.
Which is
interesting.
Interesting, for sure.
Whether you'll be able to find the base prices of any of these vehicles, like
you
such
can find
as
them.
The Corvette. Available at the $59,900, whatever it is open to question. But you could order it. I don't know how long you'd have to wait to get it.
And these are all to buy, or is this to lease?
We're basically talking about cost to buy them before we talk about leases, because that's a different...
I understand. I just also have lived long enough
to
have watched...
You see sticker prices on these vehicles in the windows, and that's how you know, and they have list prices for sale, not list prices to lease.
And it's still very much sports season, so you see numerous ads on TV for leasing, mostly, and you read the fine print, and it's only X, only
well,
X down.
Projected into 2020, and one of the business broadcast blips on the news this morning, I heard that allegedly there's price resistance starting to develop in the consumer about these steadily escalating costs of new vehicles. As we discuss in the Jeep Cherokee situation, you have a $37,000 or $38,000 level of Jeep Cherokee, and you have a $42,000 or $41,000 level of Jeep Cherokee. These are the retail sticker prices before the dealers try to add markup, up market gadgets to it, or do their sales pitches. We've talked, what is the average price of a new car is around $34,000, Jay, now?
37.
37, it's gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you divide that by 5 years before interest is added on to, and you can see how many dollars a month you'd have to pay off a $37,000 car versus a $27,000 car. Both are long, but there's a significant difference. But can you find a new car that you want at $27,000? Actually, in the Mazda line, Jay, you can. The Mazda 3 is below $30,000 at many levels.
You drove it.
And I drove one, and it was like $29,000, and it was an all-wheel drive, and it had a couple of packages on it, and it was a wonderful car. And
it's one of
it
six.
Is a nice
yep.
spacious. It's one of those you just
yep.
mentioned. But the space inside this vehicle, it's a sedan, not an SUV, was very good for a sedan. The seats were comfortable, and it drove very nicely. And it had all the power that anybody needs to drive normally without trying to get from 0 to 60 in 1.8 nanoseconds.
And to the sedan point, two completely random non-real gearhead types just went out, you know, needed to get cars, and they were looking at that's what they wanted. They wanted sedans. So
sedans are not dead.
Ford
decided they're dead. Chevy's decided they're dead, with a couple of exceptions in each case.
Having lived through the estate wagon / station wagon death.
Speaking of which, I followed a 1980s first generation Toyota Camry wagon.
Yep.
This morning, and it was in good condition.
It's still
and they're very practical.
And I would like to say, speaking of following and speaking of safety tips, which is repetitive, but it is that point in the show, this morning, where it was a little slippy depending on whether you were on back roads or main roads, I found myself first on I was driving normal speed, and yet someone came all the way up my back end and then passed me on a road that was slippery to get to the light, which was red, you know, a second before me and not get rear-ended.
It's amazing how many people speed up as they're approaching red lights and stop signs.
And then a second time, I had the misfortune of following someone who was towing a. But the people behind me didn't realize that. So some, forgive me, clown passes me in time to get to the stop sign at Hotchkiss Corner. It, like, comes whipping around, risking life and limb, but at least not slippery, to get behind the, you know,
the vehicle towing thing.
With fewer car lengths.
50-foot difference in distance.
And to get nailed at the same stop sign. So I just don't know what people are thinking. And so
driving,
I would
driving
that in
is
terms
an
of
interesting phenomenon, I got to tell you.
I have a theory on that.
Okay.
Because I've been both those guys. And I think a lot of us have. You get up a little too late in the morning, and you're running a couple minutes late, and everything on the road becomes a stressful event.
I understand.
That is true.
And the decisions we make,
because I was late,
are no longer totally rational. You get up 5 minutes earlier. You have plenty of time. Doesn't mean you're crawling on the road, but you're just you can drive just as fast, or not meaning you should be driving too fast, but you can go at the same speed, but you're going to make rational decisions every step of the way.
Yeah,
and I think psychologically it makes a huge difference. The state of mind you're in when you're driving affects the outcome of the
trip. This is definitely a good safety point to make up, because I will say that I had to get to the airport for a 7:30 departure, get somebody for a 7:30 departure, and we were on the road at 5 to get there for the so-called, what, hour or two-hour thing you're supposed to give to get from the curb to the gate. And there was no traffic on the Merritt Parkway / 684, 495, or whatever we took, the route we took to the Whitestone Bridge. And I put the vehicle on cruise control. It's the Highlander Hybrid I talked about earlier in the show, and went basically not more than 7 miles above the posted speed limits on all the roads, and it was a very calm trip. And the same way coming back, of course, I didn't have to make a time frame to getting home. I did the same thing.
And
it was really well. I was watching this light and the needle go fast between the quarter to the empty thing. And I said, I don't know much about this car, but I know where the gas station is. I'm going to find, and I got there. But I did it calmly, and I was relaxed, I passed no one, and a few cars passed me on a trip either way, and it was very relaxing. So I agree with you.
Joke about old Volvos, though, if you remember, depending on whether you're going uphill or downhill, your gas gauge changed.
That is true, too. And if you park your car on a slope, it's going to read differently than it's going to read on
the level.
You're going to
feel a whole lot better.
Level.
But, it's just the little things you learn.
But there is safety in calm driving and much more relaxed state of mind, as Jay just pointed out. And
one of my favorite Bob Green Survive the Drive safety tips is you arrive, you know, it's like you speed.
Arrive alive.
No, but you arrive at your destination, something like ridiculous, 8 seconds after
difference.
Risking the life of
everybody. Well, that's
the
thing.
Everybody.
If you do
60
miles
earlier.
An hour versus 65, you're only going 5 miles further. And it's only taking 7 minutes longer to do the same thing, you know, to get the same place. And is that 7 minutes going to be the difference between life and death? It could be for the reckless and not for the calm.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.